Okay, Brukham Aboyim, and welcome to part 5 of our series on Bitochim. Last time you'll remember, we are learning the Psicha to the Chovos Halvoros, the Shaar HaBitochim. And as we explained in the previous times that we met, the Chovos Halvoros in his Psicha does not yet talk about, as it were, the science of Bitochim. Neither does it discuss what it is that you have to be Beiteach in, or how you come about this Middah of Bitochim. For the moment, he is marketing Bitochim. He is telling us why it's worthwhile investing effort and time into this project, because one will lead a very rewarding existence. And the phrase that he has repeated time and time again, and this is really the definition and a turn of phrase that will accompany us throughout our whole project, and that is the union of Menuchas HaNefesh. If you want to lead a life of Menuchas HaNefesh, then clearly it is worthwhile investing in this tremendous project, especially during this year of Shemitah, the Chovos Halvoros, Shaar HaBitochim. Last time we met, we discussed the concept of the alchemist, the Baal HaAlkimia, who has managed to delude very successfully people into thinking that he can convert metal into zav, the kesef, and that way he makes his millions. And it would seem to be, at least at the surface, that he's has a very comfortable living. And he's always calm. And he has the Menuchas HaNefesh that we are describing. And the Chovos Halvoros described at great length that in fact there are 10 differences between the Baal HaAlkimia, the alchemist, and the one who is Boiteach Bashem. And basically, for all that it looks on the surface, the alchemist is very calm and very comfortable. He's actually living a fraught existence. He's terrified he might run out of materials. He's worried forever is he running his business correctly. He's concerned that he might be caught by either the government or by competitors, etc., etc., etc. And therefore, this inevitably lands us in the inescapable conclusion that the address, Kaviyochol, in which we have to be Beiteach in, is the Ribbono Shel Olam. I think I did mention, and if I didn't, it's mamash a mitzvah lefarsing, the person in one of the other chaburas that I'm learning Chovos Halvoros with, who approached me at the end of the Vav and said there's a groundbreaking computer technology program which apparently they're guaranteeing will bring multi-millions to the industry, and it's all singing and all dancing. And what's it called? It's in fact called the alchemist. So clearly the moshul of the Baal HaAlkimia is as alive today as it ever was. I would like, with your permission, before we continue, to just press pause for a moment and to explain a very important nakuda. This relates to Avodas HaMidos in general, but as we'll soon see, with regard to Bitochin specifically. I think I've mentioned this story in the past when we were learning together the Middah of Chesed. When we talk about stories of Gedolei Yisrael, then we have to not just recount the story, but we have to learn the story. Gedoilo Shimusha Yoiser Milimuda. Shimush Tamirei Chachomim, studying the ways of Gedolei Yisrael, is itself a form of Limud Torah, and to an extent a higher form of Limud Torah, because that's when you see the application of Torah and living a life of faith. The story is told of Agreel Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. A famous story, but I'd like to try and learn the story with you. The story is told that Rav Moshe was once in somebody's car. He was given a ride from place to place. There was another passenger in the car as well. In the middle of the trip, the passenger reaches his destination. Rav Moshe hadn't yet reached his. And this passenger leaves the car, opens the door, closes the door, and the driver then continues on the journey. And Rav Moshe says to the driver, "Do me a favor, just turn round the corner, the first available corner, and stop the car right there." That's what he does. He turns the corner, and when this previous passenger is now out of sight, Rav Moshe then finally reveals that when he opened and closed the door, he in fact closed the door on Rav Moshe's fingers. And that's why he was requesting of the driver, when this passenger was out of sight, so as not to embarrass him, please open up the door, let me release my fingers, and from there they drove straight to the hospital to have Rav Moshe Feinstein's fingers looked at. And that is the end of the story. When I first heard this story, I thought that the gadlus, the lesson that we can learn from this story, is clearly one of the Nodon Chaveroi, and you see that Rav Moshe was very makpid not to embarrass this passenger, even though he was clearly in pain, and therefore he waited until he got round the corner so that the passenger would not see what he had done. Can you imagine the terrible embarrassment of having realized you've just closed the car door on the place of Kaveh? So in order to avoid embarrassment, he waited till he was out of sight. That L'chaira is a tremendous lesson, and it is a lesson. Of course it's a tremendous lesson. But I think that if we are misboining, we will actually see that there is a tremendous limud for us if we study this story in depth. And therefore, upon reflection, I think that the limud of this story is in fact far deeper. When someone closes the doors on your fingers, that hurts. There is no doubt about it. Unless you've just been anesthetized, which presumably Rav Moshe had not been, it hurts. Undoubtedly, it hurts. And as the Bris Karav once put it, he said it in Yiddish, "Oyves tut vei shreit man," which means when it hurts, one's natural reaction is that you scream out in pain. Whether it helps or not, that's a natural reaction. If somebody would step onto your toe, it could be the person who's your best friend, it may well be, but it hurts and you would yelp in pain because that is a natural reaction. Rav Moshe in this particular story clearly did not yelp in pain. Had he done so, then this passenger would have already realized his mistake. So Rav Moshe was able not to cry out in pain. In fact, he was able to wait in total silence until they turned the corner. Imagine I would say to you, I want you to embark on a project such that you will be able to endure pain. If somebody steps on your toes, however hard it may be, you will not yelp out in pain. What would that entail? It would entail a long project of getting used to that pain and finally being able to have the resistance. If somebody steps on your toes, however much it hurts, I'm just able somehow not to react in the normal way and scream out in pain, but rather to resist the urge and the reaction to do so. We can be rest assured that Rav Moshe Feinstein did not go to any training sessions of people closing the car door on his fingers. In which case, we must ask the huge question, how was Rav Moshe able not to scream out in pain? After all, that is the natural reaction. That's the way human body is built. When the car door is closed on your fingers, that hurts. Rav Moshe had no prior warning, obviously, that this would happen. No preparation, and he never practiced for this in advance. So how on earth was he able to sit there in pain and yet in silence? And the answer is, and this I feel is really the oimek, this is the deep rooted limud of this story. And that is, when you are the Gadol HaDor, and you have led a life of Avodas Hashem and Avodas HaMidos, such that the Midah of Bein Adam LeChaveiro is of paramount importance to you, then that becomes your natural reaction. Such that if somebody closes the car door on your fingers, the natural reaction is now not to scream out, because that would embarrass the person who did so. That takes years of avodah. Not by practicing slamming the car door on your fingers, but by rather years of avodah hamidos. and avodas hamusa. That now becomes the natural reaction. That's not something you can prepare for or practice. But if your natural existence is one of being adam lechaveiro, that I'm incapable of possibly hurting anyone's feelings, then even to the extent that I might be in excruciating pain, unprepared for, the relation does not cry out in pain. That, I feel, is really the oimek. That's the limit of this story. How does this relate to us in general, and how does this relate to us specifically with regard to our project in Bitochin? And the answer is, we sometimes mistakenly view midos as tools. If somebody is an onov, then it's a useful tool. I have to act in a humble way. If somebody is a zoriz, is a midah of alacrity, then he acts in a midah of zrizus. That's not the correct look at a midos. Midos is not about what we do. Midos is about what we are. We change ourselves. Such that, of course, we naturally act in a way of anova and zrizus, etc., etc. But the onov is not somebody who does humble acts. The onov is somebody who is essentially a humble person. By definition, therefore, he does humble acts. He speaks in a humble way. He dresses in a humble way. But if not, then it's all external and it's not natural. Then he's not an onov. He's just acting in the way of an onov. But that's not what he is. That's just what he is doing. In order to become a natural, as it were, Baal Chesed, such that your existence has in fact changed to the extent that somebody can slam the car door on your fingers and you don't react. Why? Because out of concern that this Chas V'Shalom would hurt somebody else's feelings, that is an Avodas HaChayim in Midos, in which the self changes. Rav Moshe was essentially, by nature, a Ben Adam LeChaveiro expert. He was a Baal Chesed. It's not something that he did, it's something that he was. And this is true in all Avodas HaMidos. And therefore, if we come back to our project, we've embarked this Shmita year in a project on Chizukim Bitochin. Bitochin is not a tool. It's not a useful tool. What do I do when I'm feeling down? What will I do when I'm going through difficulty so that I'll employ my Bitochin tricks? That's not what Bitochin is. Bitochin is a midah. Bitochin is a state of being where the person himself changes and forever, not on occasion, forever lives an existence of menuchas hanefesh with this feeling that I am in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Such that, yes, indeed, when the difficult nisyonos arise, whether it be nisyonos in ruchnius or in gashmius, whether in parnosa or in health, in Chinuch HaBonim, whatever it may be, when those difficult situations arise, yes, of course I have the tools and equipment to deal with it, but not because I now take out from my toolkit the tool called Bitochin, but rather because I am by nature a Baal Bitochin. That now becomes my natural reaction. My natural reaction is one of a constant state of feeling that I am in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Other than, as opposed to, when everything is going well, then I forget the Ribbono Shel Olam. When things are all of a sudden going difficult, let's remember the Vadi, let's remember our Shiurim on Bitochin. And let's try and apply one or two of the tips. That's not what Bitochin is about. Bitochin is a state of being, a constant state of being. Just as somebody who is a Baal Chesed is not a Baal Chesed on Tuesday afternoons only. It's a constant state of being. He's forever on the lookout. How can I help other people? How can I, chas v'sholom, avoid hurting somebody else's feelings? Not on occasion, that's what I am, not what I do. And therefore it's constant. So too, this is what our project is all about. Our project of becoming Baalei Bitochen is not how to do acts of Bitochen, but rather to live in a constant state of Menuchas HaNefesh. Now it's true, there's no all or everything. There is no badge at the end where we get awarded a certificate, you are hereby a qualified Baal Bitochen. Of course, there are levels upon levels upon levels upon levels upon levels of Bitochen, and like any Midah, we might sometimes trip up and let ourselves down. Fine, that's why we're trying to be Mitzchazik in this project. But we're trying to work out what it is that's our goal. Where are we striving for? What are we aspiring, not just to do, but what are we aspiring to become? We're aspiring to become the Baalei Bitochen who forever feel in the hands of the Rabbeinu Shalom. The Vilna Goyim was once asked, how would you define and describe Bitochen? And the Vilna Goyim says, I don't need to describe and define Bitochen because David HaMelech has already done so. Where so? In the Pasuk in Tehillim, when he describes his existence as one as the young child in the arms of his mother. That is the closest moshul that we can possibly get to Bitochen. Having said that, we will see, not today, but later on in our project, the moshul definitely has some shortcomings. It's not the perfect moshul. There is no perfect moshul. The only address, the only possibility of really feeling the ultimate Menuchas HaNefesh is one who's Beiterach in the Rebbeinu Shalom. But the closest moshul we can think of is the child who's in the hands of his mother and feels that his cares, his needs are all taken care of and there's nothing to worry about. And whatever he needs, for sure his mother will take care of. That's the closest moshul that we have. The baby, the child, when does the child feel that? On which particular occasion does a child feel secure and calm and serene? And the answer is 24/7. It's not something that he has to wheel out or exercise in times of difficulty. That's his constant state of being as a young child. I'm in the safe care hands of my parents. So too, when we are trying to embark on our project of feeling in the hands of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, it's not what do I do on a difficult day? But rather, how do I lead my life in general? My life in general, I'm aspiring to live it as a Baal Bitochen. Yes, certainly the te'eres of that perhaps will be felt most poignantly when I find myself in difficult situations. That's true. But essentially, it's an existence that is true 24/7. Every time I daven, I feel it. Every time I walk in the street, I feel it. And every project that I'm involved in, I feel it. And this, therefore, is a very important point of introduction, and we're still in the introduction to our project of Emunah and Bitochen. Let's come back now to the Cholos HaLevavos. As mentioned, the Cholos HaLevavos is still talking about the various Toyalios. Te'alios means, what is the te'eles in the plural form? Why would you want to leave a life of Bitochen? So he talks about when a person is a Baal Bitochen, then that helps him in his Ruchni life in the following manner, in addition to all those that we have mentioned up to this stage. Imagine somebody who is blessed and he becomes wealthy, but he's not a Baal Bitochen. He is forever worried, besides for what we've discussed in the past, about will he lose his money. That's also true. Chazal teach us that. Marbe nechosim, marbe daiga. The more assets, the more worries. But besides for that, he has a spiritual concern as well. And what is the spiritual concern? He's forever worried. Have I been mekayim, my chiyuvim, the way I'm supposed to? If indeed I've been blessed with money, have I given enough tzedakah? Have I given tzedakah to the right people? Am I sure I'm using money in the right way? There was, in the times of Rav Chaim Britzker, a tremendous gvir, a very wealthy individual who was known to be an enormous Baal Tzedakah. And overnight, he lost all of his money. And they approached Rav Chaim and they said, how can this be? A Baal Tzedakah on that stature, why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished him in this way? He's lost all his money. And Rav Chaim says, he has not been punished. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tested him, the test of Ashirus. Not an easy life to live a life of wealth. And he passed that test with flying colors. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is now testing him with a different test. And this is the test of poverty. It's not a punishment. One needs to know that if indeed one is blessed with wealth, then that can certainly present all types of challenges. Begashmias uberuchmias. But especially for the one who's not Beiteach Bashem. So too, as he explains, the Kremis Alvavus, the Baal Bitochen views his money altogether differently to the one who's not a Baal Bitochen. He does not identify himself with his money. This is not what I am. This is what I own and this is what I have. There's this terrible, terrible expression which every time I hear it, it just jars me. When you hear about a wealthy person and the question is asked, how much is he worth? Which is obviously a question that should be rephrased. How much money does he happen to have in his bank account? But how much is he worth? I don't know, it depends how much he learns and how much he avoids talking Lashon Hara and depends what his davening is like. How much is he worth means that you are identifying the person with his money. That's what he is. The Baal Bitochen does not view his money like that. He views the money as a gift from the Ribbono Shel Olam. I've had this deposited with me in order to distribute appropriately. Whether it's to my family, whether it's to institutions that need my help, whether it's to other families, I am nothing more than a bank manager. This is not something that I am. The bank manager who happens to be running a bank that contains billions of dollars in it does not view himself as a wealthier person. It's not his money. It's not his money. The Chovos HaVavos now continues and says that, in conclusion to his introduction, as mentioned already, that the Baal Bitochen just generally leads a more peaceful, serene, relaxed life. And he quotes the Pasuk, which I think we mentioned in the past, Baruch HaGever Asher Yivtach Bashem V'Oyo Hashem Niftachli. That Pasuk is famous. The Pasuk afterwards, perhaps less so, because the next Pasuk says, V'Hoyo Ke'et Shosul Almayim. The tree that's planted right next to the river, it forever has its water source. Therefore, even in the scorching hot weather, other trees, perhaps not attached to the river, are flaking and are just withering in the sun. But he's not. Nothing happens to him because he's connected to the Mayim. He forever has his water source. Nothing can move him or upset him. The story is told of from Chatzkel Levenstein, the Ponovitch Mashkiach, who was also the Mashkiach in the Meir Yeshiva, of course. The Chazanish described him as a living example of Emunah and Bitochen in our generation. Reb Chatzkel Levenstein had two daughters, and he was determined and davened and dreamed of being able to marry them off to Talmidei Chachamim. But as was the Minag, he knew this would be impossible unless he would be able to put down a substantial amount of money in order to promise the chassan to be able to support them in learning. Otherwise, there was no way he'd be able to marry them off to Talmidei Chachamim. And therefore, for years on end, he saved little change here and there. And over the course of the years, this sum of money amassed to a sizable amount, and he had it split into two for his two daughters. On one occasion, when the family were not at home, somebody broke into their home and stole all the money that he had painstakingly stolen and saved for years and years and years. His family arrived home before he did, and they saw what had happened. Besides for the agmas nefesh of seeing the money being stolen, there was the equal agmas nefesh, what would Reb Chatzkel say? How are we possibly going to break this news to him? And before they had a chance to gather their thoughts and to plan how exactly they would break this difficult news to him, all of a sudden Reb Chatzkel arrives on the scene. And he straight away sensed that something was wrong. What's the problem? What's happened? And nobody could tell him. What happened? Something clearly has occurred. You're hiding something from me, until one of the members of the family just blurted out, all the money that you've saved for years has gone. It's been stolen. Reb Chatzkel stopped, and he said, and this was again his natural reaction, and he said it in Yiddish, Biz yet mizrabayna shalaylam vaita mizrabayna shalaylam. Until this point, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will continue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's been no change. This is a dugma of what we spoke about before. This was clearly unplanned and unprepared for. But if you live a life of working on bitochen, then this now becomes your natural reaction. Somebody else's natural reaction, the one of the non-baal bitochen, would have been on frustration, anger, blame, etc., etc. The baal bitochen's natural reaction, just like Reb Moshe's natural reaction after a lifetime of avodas hamidos, is not to allow the pain of having the door slammed on your fingers allow you to embarrass somebody else. The natural reaction of Reb Chatzkel was, yes, that may well be 20 years of savings all up in smoke in an instant. Vaita mitzvah Rabbeinu Shalom. That's the eighth shasul al-mayim. That's the serene existence of the tree firmly planted next to the river. It might be absolutely boiling hot outside. Trees are falling one after another, but not this particular one. He's unmoved, he's unfazed. I have my water source, I'm well connected. The Baal Bitochin forever feels well connected. Where will I get the money to marry off my two daughters now? Mit the Rabbeinu Shalom. The addendum, by the way, to the story is that both of Reb Chatzkel's daughters married Talmidei Chachamim Muflogim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu indeed made it possible. He did his ishtablus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivered the hatzlocha. Vaita mitzvah Rabbeinu Shalom. But that's the serene life. That's the eight shosul al-mayim, says the Chavos al-Volos. Why would you not want to live a life like that? Isn't it kedai to invest energy in being a chazak in bitochen? The Chavos al-Volos now introduces us to another point, and this is a big chidush. Somebody who does not live a life of bitochen is running around in an exaggerated way on occasion in order to earn his parnassah. He doesn't believe that parnassah comes from Shemayim. He believes that he is the sole source of his income and will go to crazy extent sometimes to earn this money. And he brings a story. And the story is of somebody who is trying indeed to be mischazik and bitochen, and he went off to a distant land in order to try and earn a living. And he bumped into a goy, nonetheless. A goy. And he starts rebuking this goy, somebody who's serving Avodah Zarah. And he says, why didn't you live a life like me of bitachin, of belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam? Why are you wasting your time serving this Avodah Zarah? So he says to him, tell me, who do you serve? He says, I serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the HaKoyl Yochad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Baal HaYochayres, able to support, run, feed, take care of, heal. That's the one that you should be serving. To which the guy turned around and said the famous phrase, Pa'olcha Soiser Esvarecho. What you are doing contradicts what you are saying. You are a living hypocrite. If you really serve the Ribbono Shel Olam and you really believe that he could provide with your needs, why have you traveled halfway across the globe in order to learn a living? Don't you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the one you serve, can provide you with parnasa back in your hometown? Indeed, he was Makabel the Musa, and he went back home, and he never left his town. Now, this does raise obvious problems, because we certainly know that there are those who have to travel for their parnasa. Does that necessarily mean that they're living a life devoid of bitachin? What about Avraham Avinu, who led a life of going from Haran to Eretz Yisrael, and he came to Eretz Yisrael, and there was no food. Vayhi ro'ov ba'aretz, there was a hunger. So he left Eretz Yisrael. So what are we going to say? The lack of Baal Bitachin? Avraham Avinu is the dogma for all generations of the Baal Bitachin. He is the semel of Emunah. He spent his life disseminating the teaching that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. So why, when he came to Eretz Yisrael and there was no food, did he all of a sudden leave Eretz Yisrael? Didn't the Chavos Avodos just teach us that if you really have bitachin, then you can indeed find parnasa at your doorstep? So this clearly must be a rule that has exceptions, with the obvious question, so how am I supposed to know if I'm the rule or I'm the exception? Maybe back home there was a hunger, and there was no parnasa. And therefore I really was forced, maybe for a punishment, maybe for a nisayon, to have to travel across the globe in order to earn my living. This is clearly a question that we're going to have to discuss in the future, when we talk about the extent to which a person does his hishtadlus. He talks about, and with this we'll finish for this evening, the one who is devoid of bitachin. Not only will he go to crazy extent traveling across the world, but he'll have to endure and undertake dangerous jobs. He'll have to undertake jobs that have crazy work hours, because I don't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running my life. And even though he may not say that, but subconsciously, that's the way he feels. If I put in 18 hours a day of work, then finally I'll be able to live a life of comfort. But what about my family? What about my children? What about my davening? What about my learning? What happens to all of that? Yeah, but I've got to earn parnasa. Ah, so you mean you don't really believe that if you spend time with your family, if you spend time learning, if you spend time doing chesed, you don't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can provide you with a parnasa. You are in a constant state of fear. What will be if I don't earn my money? What will be if I don't put in those crazy work days? That's the life of somebody who has no bitachin. And finally, says the Chavos Avodos, and again, of course, these are very high levels of bitachin, but he talks about those where, even when difficulty arises, not only are they able to cope, not only are they able to say, Vaitam is the Ribbono Shel Olam, but they are in fact able to be besimcha. Besimcha in all occasions. And I'll just conclude, and we may have mentioned this in a previous vow, but my family had a cousin here in Eretz Yisrael, one of the Gedolei Eretz Yisrael, an enormous Talmud Chacham who was nifta, unfortunately, a few years ago, Agoyen Agodol Rebron Genachovsky Zechatadik Lebracha. And he himself had various difficulties throughout his life, difficult nisyonis, he had a young child, he had to take to America, he was nifta, he had a serious fire in his apartment, and the end of his life, in fact, was nifta from illness. But the doctor who treated him said in all his years, he never saw any patient who conducted himself with such dignity and serenity like he saw with Ron Genachowski. In fact, when the doctor had to break the news, the difficult news to him that this is the illness that he's suffering from, he did not get the normal reaction. Rather, Avram stopped, and his only reaction was, "Thank you very much for breaking the news to me in such a caring and professional manner." That's the life of a Baal Bitochin. And when this doctor said he'd never in all his life seen a reaction like that, that can be translated as he'd never seen a Baal Bitochin like he had with Avram Genachowski. That's the life that we are describing. We don't want to face nisyonos. We daven every day, shelo yalidei nisyonos. But when these inevitable nisyonos of life, when they do arrive at our footstep, we have to be prepared. And it's too late to prepare for them when they arrive. We have to prepare for them before they arrive. Such that, as we mentioned, this now becomes our natural state of existence. This is not something that we do, but this is something that we are. Of course, the story with Reb Chatzkel is a very lofty level of bitachon. To be able to react like that, 20 years of saving, just up in smoke in a moment, and to be able to say, no, weiter mit der Rabbeinu shel Olam, of course, is a very lofty level of bitachon. But at least to aspire to get close to that, that's what we are gathering together every Monday for, in order to have Siyata Deshmaya. So may indeed HaKadosh Baruch Hu send us Siyata Deshmaya, as I'm sure I've mentioned in the past, and we will mention it in the future. We daven every single day. Ala Tzadikim v'ala Chassidim, we talk about the same Tzachar Toiv l'chol aboitchim v'shimcha be'emes, and then what do we say? V'sim chelkeinu imohem lo'ilom. May our chelek be together with those Baalei Bitochen. In other words, we are, in fact, davening for Siyata Deshmaya, for Bitochen, every single day. Mit Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be Mekayim and respond to our tefillahs, and we should have that Siyata Deshmaya to be able to be Mischazik in the middle of Bitochen Bashem.